Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Here's San Francisco and the incomparable forward, Rick Barry.
Behind the end line, they burn him again, and it's Barry.
And now Rick Barry, the league's leading scorer. What a superb basketball player he is.
Hi, everybody. Rick Barry here on Warriors 24, along with my sidekick, Cyrus Satchis, the surf man himself. And we are ready to roll today and a number of issues and topics to get into. And I kind of like it, Cyrus, because you're getting kind of really into a lot of things that are, very controversial in a way. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like that. And I'm certainly going to give my opinion, but I'm going to kind of give you free rein here on today's show.
All right.
To kind of, air the stuff that's bothering you. You know, you got a lot of things that are really troublesome to you. So let's get into it and have some fun.
Well, Rick, I always feel like the value of this podcast and a huge part of our connection. And again, you could correct me. This is just me reading you and maybe making assumptions to a certain regard. But I have, whether or not, you could say it's legitimate, I feel like my behavior towards the media is based off me having a chip on my shoulder. I feel like you and I have been disrespected so much from depending on what organization we've worked for or what sports we're involved with. And I have gripes at times towards sports media. I do have a chip because I do feel like the wrong people on many occasions are given attention. And more importantly, as someone who is a believer of journalistic integrity, as someone who's a believer in objectivity and transparency and speaking the truth, I don't feel like there's a lot of that when it comes to sports media. And so something's been coming up recently in the last few days, and I've been noticing this more and more, and it has to do with ESPN and Rachel Nichols, who hosts The Jump, and she's kind of become like the face of ESPN's media coverage of the NBA. She's really one of the only individuals there who has an exclusive NBA show. And what I'm noticing more and more is a considerable amount of bias towards, in favor of Nike athletes, in which LeBron James is the leader of. I mean, there are stories that indicate he makes more money from his Nike contract than he does from his NBA contract with the Lakers. And, and there's certain Twitter users who, one individual named Jody, she has a Twitter account named SV Word Girl. And I love the criticism she's been laying recently towards Rachel Nichols and others. But the foundation of this is that the NBA, and to a lesser extent, their primary media partners, ESPN and TNT, give heavy favoritism towards LeBron James and Nike athletes. This is not necessarily a big market issue. This is more of a Nike issue. I mean, Nike is a behemoth when it comes to corporations associated with sports.
I like that word. Good word.
And thanks for letting me talk this long. So
that's fine. Go.
And the NBA, I mean, I'm sorry, Nike, look, you can have a lot of legitimate criticism against them more recently because of all this news regarding the FBI and them basically giving money towards athletes, college athletes, a lot of this very illegal. Well, if you look at the coverage and you look at the NBA, you look at the Player of the Month award, you look at the Player of the Week award, you look at referee outcomes, you look at the team with the best record in the NBA, the Bucks. How much attention are the Bucks getting right now? How much attention is the leading MVP candidate Giannis getting right now? Antetokounmpo. I'm actually starting to pronounce his last name properly finally after how many years. How much attention has Damian Lillard. Lillard, thank you. Getting, he's had one of the most dominant months in NBA history, especially for a guard, and he did not get Player of the Month or Player of the Week. That's insane.
Yeah, it is. And that just shows you that it's a very subjective thing. And there's so definitely bias around. And no question, some people are influenced by it. And, yeah, and here's my thing. And the people that you're talking about, Rachel Nichols has so much qualification to be an FBI expert, doesn't she?
Oh, yeah, yeah, she does.
Yeah, right. Because she happened to be someone that got lucky enough to get hired to be able to cover NBA basketball.
I follow your sarcasm.
I mean, seriously. And it's the same thing with so many of the other talking heads who are out there. And here's another thing for the criticism that goes. And I was very proud of him to see the quote that came up, who's been getting some criticism, Andrew Wiggins, okay?
Yes.
Here's his quote. Everyone is entitled to their own opinion. I feel like real ballers, real people that have been there and done that, I respect their opinion. If you haven't been there, done it, then I don't really look too deep into it. I think he doesn't realize that he's plagiarizing me because I have said this for decades. So amazing. Maybe he didn't wear it and he read it somewhere, but kudos to you, Andrew Wiggins, because you are right on about it. You can't let that kind of stuff bother you. You take it from its source, and the majority of the time, the source that it's coming from isn't worth it. It's not worth paying any attention to it because it's just their stupid opinion. My wife hates when I use the word stupid, but in some cases, uneducated opinion.
Yes.
About something that they really think they know a lot about, but they really don't.
Do you want to hear Wiggins talking about criticism?
Sure.
This is Andrew Wiggins.
Do you think any of it is fair, or is it
fair? Everyone's entitled to their own opinion. You know, I feel like real ballers, you know, real people that have been there and done that, you know, I respect their opinion. You know, if you haven't been there and done that, you know, you're entitled to your own opinion, but I'm not really thinking too deep into it.
How do you feel about your game? If somebody says...
All right, and that was the crux of it based off what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the quote that I wrote out, and he heard him saying it, and he said it without any real, you know, animosity, any real super anger, just being matter of fact about it. And congratulations to you, Andrew, because I think that was a great answer to the question and the situation that exists. And you're going about it, I think, in the right way to deal with it, so it should not impact you one iota. Go out, do your thing. Now, you know, it's another thing if somebody like a Timmy Legler came out or some guy that played the game and he has something to say about you. Now you got to take a serious look at that because this is a guy that who has been there, who has done that. And chances are when they're making their opinion about it, they're trying to be constructive criticism. That's my thing. It's if I say something critical about it, I'm trying to be constructive about it. I'm trying to be informative about it. I'm not doing it to put the person down or the situation down. I'm trying to be informative, and that's what it should be about. And you give your opinion based upon the knowledge that you have with regard to that situation. So good for you, Andrew. Good for you.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a great quote. And the thing with Rachel Nichols that's bringing a lot of pointed criticism her way is she decided to turn the Kobe Bryant tragedy into an MVP case for LeBron James. I mean, LeBron, whether you want to use statistics, whether you want to use record, he's clearly a distant second place to Giannis in the MVP award race right now. But to use an individual's death and market it towards another individual's award accolades, I think it's very justifiable criticism. You know, you look at the panel she routinely brings on. I don't think she's ever brought you on there, but she does bring a lot of former athletes who are LeBron friends, were part of that trust circle. And whether you want to include Clutch as a greater extent of that, Rachel Nichols came out and said that she has voted previously for Klay Thompson to make the all defensive team. Apparently she has a vote there and she started voting back in 2017, only she's never actually voted for him because that information was released. And that right there attacks her credibility. All of a sudden, can you trust her now when she's sitting here and lying about stuff like that? And then you look at the fact that the referees missed that Damian Lillard, a goaltending, you know, as another example, the NBA maybe exhibiting more favoritism towards LeBron and that crew. You know, I don't think it's a coincidence that Steph Curry is with Under Armour. I don't think it's a coincidence that a lot of vitriol against the Warriors stems from the fact that they are the reason LeBron James does not have 5 or 6 titles instead of the 3 he currently has. A lot of attacks against Kevin Durant You know, you don't really see many people shutting that down. And the criticism, again, of Durant going to the Warriors, I know people love to bring up, well, he went to a championship contender, you know, shame on him for not challenging himself. Well, maybe the real anger is him going there prevented LeBron from getting two or three more titles.
Well, and it definitely did that.
Yeah, and so the narrative now remains Jordan is king and LeBron probably not. And so that's the that's what I've been seeing a lot of, and I do think a lot of this criticism towards Rachel Nichols, towards the NBA, towards ESPN is very valid. I mean, when you're literally exhibiting this amount of one-sided coverage, you know, Andre Iguodala came out and literally said, Stephen Curry, we talked about this 2 weeks ago, Stephen Curry never gets the free throw calls, never gets the calls from the refs. And now I'm starting to wonder if the big picture here is that these are not Nike soldiers. These are not people towing the main company line that's making the most money for the NBA. And as a result, we're not seeing the kind of favoritism that LeBron and other people in that camp receive. So I'm done with my diatribe on that, Rick. Thank you for giving me the platform.
Oh, another good word. But you're throwing out the vocabulary today, Cyrus.
So, Rick, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, you're one of the greatest ever.
I agree with what you're saying. I mean, it's always bias involved in everything in life, unfortunately. Yeah. And in this world, again, you just have to look at it exactly with what Andrew said, Wiggins. Take it from its source. What credibility does that source really have? And is their opinion any more valid than your opinion? And it really isn't, other than the fact that they're lucky enough to have a job where they get to talk about that. But they are not necessarily experts about everything to do with sports. It's especially amazing when they get the shows where these guys talk about every sport and they've got the answer to everything in every sport. They are so omnipotent. That's a good word for you, right?
That is, yes.
Yeah. So it really is. That's the way it is in the broadcast world. It's absolutely insane. I remember when I was broadcasting that there was someone doing the reviews and writing a column about the broadcasting in USA Today who was criticizing stuff. He was a PR guy for an ABA team years ago. Uh-huh. And all of a sudden, he is now a critic to tell whether or not someone is good or not as a broadcaster? And it was the most ludicrous thing ever.
What did he say about you?
Oh, he got on my case about stuff and everything. And so it was very interesting. And so I had a talk one time with him. In fact, he got mad at me because I defended my play-by-play guy, Bob Neal from Turner.
Okay.
And said, that's ridiculous what he's saying about him. It's crazy. And so after that, all of a sudden, he was on me. And he started finding things to criticize me about. Oh. So I went to him one time and there was a show or something going on and I got him to go on the show, right? He did the show. So all of a sudden, the next season, my broadcasting, I got Comeback of the Year award.
Oh, wow.
It's such bullshit. Excuse me.
I mean, that's all right.
I mean, seriously, it was so ludicrous. But that's the kind of stuff that happens.
Yep.
It's not necessarily the truth. It's not necessarily valid. It's not necessarily meaningful. It's just the way life works. This guy had no business having that job. He had no credibility whatsoever in that area. And again, it's his opinion about it. And he actually cost some people their jobs.
Oh, see, that's not cool. That's not right.
No, it was so wrong on so many levels. And so, but that just shows you how ludicrous it is. So I did something for him to get in this thing. I just laughed. I said, oh, my God, look at me. Lucky me. I have just worked so hard to get the Comeback of the Year.
And this is back when you were, what, was CBS, right?
Oh, when I was doing Turner stuff.
Turner. Okay, gotcha.
It was crazy. So
yeah, you are one of the few who have succeeded in both platforms. You went from being a pro athlete and then you actually became an accomplished broadcaster, whereas a lot of these pro athletes can't really make that transition. They don't articulate themselves clearly. But
I studied, Cyrus.
Yeah.
I took, when I was in college, I couldn't, in the business school, I couldn't have a minor, but I had enough credits probably to get a major if I would. I took every radio and TV and film course that was available to me.
Nice.
I took speech courses. I took things because my goal was, when I was younger, I wanted to become a professional athlete. And it was between baseball and basketball. And then I had a bad situation in high school in baseball. And so I got into basketball, fortunately. And I was watching Pat Summerall and Frank Gifford, the two great football players who went into the broadcasting career in the New York metropolitan area, and said, wow, that'd be cool. That's what I want to do. I want to go and become a professional athlete and then become a broadcaster. And so what did I do? I prepared myself on the court by putting the time and the effort in to get my skills honed enough to the point where I could accomplish that goal. And I studied all the other things necessary to learn as much about it as I could so that I would have the opportunity to go into the broadcasting world. And I actually got a job in my rookie season. I did radio after the season was over. I was the sports reporter on KNBR radio in the morning for Frank Dill, who was like the big hot guy.
Frank and Mike was with the
It was just Frank by himself at that time.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And and then it was Frank and Mike. And so I wound up doing that. And that's kind of how things really started out. So, but I prepared myself for it. A lot of these other guys don't necessarily prepare themselves.
They don't.
I'll tell you, there's a lot of them out there, and I'm not going to name names are doing it, but they're not very good.
Lot of them.
They're masters of the obvious.
Yes.
And the things that they say, I just wonder, I sometimes question, I said, are they watching the same game I'm watching?
Yeah, the obvious thing is, it always sticks out to me when broadcasters get away with saying what is so obvious. There's no point in saying it. It's just filler.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, it is a visual medium. If you're not doing radio and you have something to explain and people see it. I mean, I remember one time I was doing something. It happened to be in Portland, and you use different crews and stuff, and the director, whoever was there, he played the same replay, kept playing the same replay. And so I just kind of nicely had to say, well, you saw it actually the first time before it, and then the replay kind of showed it again. And so we're looking at this again in case maybe you went to go and get an ice cream or a beer or something in the refrigerator. Here it is again for you to see. So this might be the third time that you've seen it. I mean, I just killed him because it was ridiculous that he kept playing the same thing over and over again. And usually when a replay comes up, I'm trying to point out something different. And that's one of the things that I got people to do when I was broadcasting. Is look, stop giving me these tight shots of the player with the ball. You can't see what's happening in the game. There's so many other things that come into play that determine what should be happening. Give me a wide shot and give me the thing with the telestrator so I can show the people what was happening and why this play developed and why guys made mistakes because they turned their head on the other side. They weren't in the right position. So I can explain exactly what took place. So you get a close up doing stuff. That's not going to show anything other than what the guy did. And you already saw that.
I love that you studied so much that you weren't just an expert on broadcasting. You were an expert on media aesthetics. Good stuff.
No, I took everything. I took all the courses I could take in radio, TV, and film work, talked to people about it, learned a lot about it. I was always interested in the acting part. I mean, when I was in high school, I was in a play in the juniors, my junior year. I had the lead in the senior play. I loved that part of it and studied it. And then even when I was trying to get into it, I was offered some opportunities to be guest star in some shows, and I turned them down because I really hadn't studied enough. And I went and I took a lot of lessons and went to classes and stuff to study acting with a lady by the name of Estelle Harmon, some other people down in Los Angeles when I lived down there for 1 year. And in life, you have to prepare yourself properly to do things. The last thing I would ever want to do is go out and make a fool of myself in front of millions of people. I'm going to prepare myself for it. Now, I might still make a fool of myself, but at least I tried to learn what it was and minimize the chances of that happening.
So did you actually guest star in any TV shows or movies?
Well, not the big thing, though. It was just little stuff. I was on Fame, but I didn't play myself. I just played Debbie Allen. We were doing something. I was playing a part of a basketball player. And we're doing some stuff where they're doing this dancing thing. And all of a sudden, I sprained my ankle and everything. And she comes over and starts to rub. And they had the script saying, oh, that's much better. And I said, excuse me. I said, trust me, I've had this before. If I turn my ankle and sprain my ankle, having anybody in the world other than God coming over to rub my ankle, it's not going to be good. Okay. I can say, how about if I just say, oh, that's better. They said, oh yeah, that'd be good. Use that. And then probably one of the ones I had the most fun was when I did Coach with Craig T. Nelson, who's now on Young Sheldon show.
Craig T. Nelson has been in a million things. I love that guy.
Well, he was Coach on the show Coach.
I remember that with Jerry Van Dyke.
With Jerry Van Dyke, right. So I had a chance to go and be on that show. And so the deal was, when I got there, I saw the script. It was that it was supposed to be the year of hell for Hayden, for him in his life. Mm-hmm. And when I met the producers and I got to talking to him and told him I'd studied acting, he said, really? And all, I think I found out really that they tried to get Will Chamberlain and he wouldn't do it. So they got me anyway. But that's okay. Right. I don't mind seconds.
To Chamberlain, especially.
Yeah,
I guess it depends on what. I guess it does depend on what the seconds are, but
But this is exactly. Let's not get into that. So this is so I go on the show, and so the deal is that Jerry Van Dyke comes running into his office, going, "Oh my God, can you believe that Rick Barry's coming to interview for the basketball job here? It's unbelievable, Rick. Rick Barry? They said my name so many times." He says, "Look, what are you, crazy? Rick Barry's off somewhere flying around in one of those TV jets and doing broadcasting work. He's not going to come here and coach." He says, "No, Rick Barry's really going to be here." And so then Dauber comes running in. And
he goes,
"Did you hear that Rick Barry's going to be coming in?" And so, I mean, they said my name over and over again. And so my deal is I knock on the door, I poke my head in, and I see him, Hayden, there, right? And I said, "Are you so-and-so?" And I forget the name of the athletic director. And he goes, Yeah, that's right, Rick. Hey, they didn't get a hold of you and tell you that, the position's been filled already. He comes over, does them, pushes me out of the door. That was my bit. Now, the producers, after I talked to them, because I had something that I had to say in that one as well, having studied the acting, I mean, to make it realistic, when he said, "Oh, yeah, that's me," and I said, "Look, if I'm going to look in and see him sitting there, and he tells me he's the athletic director, who I don't know by sight or anything," I said, my first reaction would be, "You're so-and-so?" Like, I would question. He's, "No, that's good. Yeah, use that." So I did it. And they said, "Ah, Rick, if we had known that you had studied and you did a great job," he said, "man, we would have written you into the script for the whole season, had you actually get hired and then go after his girlfriend." He said, "It would have been awesome." So that was kind of disappointing, but it was a lot of fun doing. You know what? I still get residual checks from that show that still shows every once in a while. That's why these people who are on some of these really successful shows like Friends and everything, the kind of money that they make in residuals is just crazy.
I can't believe you're still getting a check. I'm looking at IMDb right now, and there you are as a former guest star. I was part of the cast of the show, Coach. Amazing.
Yeah,
Rick, I love it. I tried to find the video, but I couldn't find it. I don't think it's online.
It was very funny. But I said, said my name so many times. It was kind of cool.
Oh, I love
it. Good thing. And so that's, I really haven't had, I had a chance to go on and be asked to be on Wonder Woman, but that's the one I turned down because I just didn't want to do it. I wasn't prepared and ready, didn't think I could do a good enough job. And then the one that I was prepared for, and they wanted it. They wanted to use me. Was I went and I read for Freddie Dreyer had the show Hunter,
okay,
on TV. I
clearly remember that show. Yeah.
And so I went and I read for Vince Chase, who was the casting director, and he said, "Oh, this is going to be great." He says, "You know, Freddie's tall. He's like 6'5" or something." He said, "It'd be great to have somebody your size and do something. And I can see you. You know, you're the type of guy. You look like the all American guy, but you could be a nasty, you know, terrible, evil person." I said, "Yeah, I could do that." And so a lot of people think I'm that anyway, so it's okay. So.
Unfairly, by the way.
So I read for it, and he wanted to say, "Oh, this would be great. We're going to have you on next season." Freddie's going through contract negotiations. They're running into an impasse. They don't sign him. They cancel the show.
Oh.
So that was very disappointing. And then the other one I tried to get to do, and they were going to do it, was the possibility of going on To Catch a Thief with Robert Wagner. And that I was supposedly going to be the guy that they would go to find that I was one of his prison mates one time. He said, "Oh, for this job, I got the perfect guy. This guy was in jail with me and everything. He's tall. I need somebody tall to do it. We can get him." And I was supposed to be that guy. And then it never happened. And then the last one that I came close to doing it was Al Ruddy, the famous the producer and stuff that did, I think he did The Godfather, if I'm not mistaken, Al Ruddy. But anyway, he had a script and he wanted to do something called The Rough Riders, which was about Teddy Roosevelt. He said, "Oh, Rick, you'd be perfect for this." He said, "I can get you in there. You know, you'd have, you know, a chance to play a nice role, have some lines and stuff and everything. And you'd be good because the cowboys were, you know, tall guys back and then, and you could be one of the rough riders that he picks to do it." He said, "This would be great for you." And they never got it, you know, financed, and they never did the movie. So anyway, that's my great history in the Broughton.
I still can't believe you turned down an opportunity to be next to Linda Carter.
Oh, I know. That was hard.
That's,
That was hard. Yeah, that was very hard. Yeah, she was pretty hot.
Oh, he still probably still is. I mean,
yeah, she still looks really good doing everything. Oh, you know who really knows her really quite well is my dear friend Clifford Ray knows Linda Carter really well. Yeah.
How so? How?
I don't know. Clifford knows so many of them. He knows all. I mean, he's an amazing guy. He's actually writing a book, which I think is going to be very interesting. And
I'm still waiting.
I'm telling you, right? He's going to come out. No, he's going to come out with some really stuff that people are going to be very eye opening and all. He's been treated incredibly unfairly, and it really, really upsets me because I don't like to see an injustice being done to anyone, especially if it's someone that's near and dear to you. And Clifford's like a brother to me. He's been treated so unfairly by so many of the teams in the NBA, and probably the best big man's coach in the last 25 years in the NBA, without question. And never, you know, always was paid the low salary. Couldn't even sit on the bench in a lot of teams. Got treated like garbage by so many of the teams. It's just very sad. Very sad. So I hope it all comes out. And you know, can you imagine being a guy that helps a team to get championships and stuff, and you don't even get a full share of playoff money?
That's insane.
It's embarrassing.
It is.
Yeah, it's really embarrassing. So that's the kind of stuff that goes on. So everything isn't quite the way that everybody portrays it to be, and you hear all these wonderful things about what goes on in the NBA. It's all not peaches and cream, you know? It's all not, you know, the yellow brick road.
Yes, look behind the curtain. Absolutely.
It's not the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Well, I'm still waiting for your book, Rick. I know you mentioned it a couple times.
I talked about it and doing stuff and all. I'm sure if I do that, I'm probably going to tick a lot of people off. But I don't know if I want to do it or not. We'll see.
You should. I mean, that's an autobiography I would read in a second.
Well, I see all of these things going on. Heck, I couldn't even get something to get done about doing something about doing one of these, you know, what, 30-30s or whatever the hell they do.
Yes,
some of these.
Yeah.
When somebody tried to do something, put something together, do one of these documentary stuff. And I see some of the documentaries that are done. I'm going, what? I mean, seriously? I mean, I do think I have a rather unique story. I mean, the stuff and everything, even what's happened with my family. I mean, there's never been a family like that in any sport.
Ever. No.
I mean, And what I did, you know, some of the other things, which is, you know, no big deal. But, I mean, I did what I did. And it wasn't like I was out there to try to be some hero, you know, with the reserve clause before Curt Flood with basketball. Because we had the exact same clause that baseball had, the reserve clause.
Right.
Which was basically a contract of slavery. I mean, you sign one of them and you're locked up for life.
Well, isn't that one of the big reasons you went to the ABA, right? For options, for more money.
Well, I didn't go for money at all. That's the whole thing. Money hungry. No, I didn't go for money. I could have stayed and made more money with the Warriors.
So why did you go to the
ABA? I went because I love the game, and the game had always been fun for me. And I wrote about this in like my Confessions of Basketball Gypsy. The game had always been fun for me. And God rest his soul. And I really liked him as a person, Bill Sharman, my coach. Bill Sharman made it so it wasn't fun. It was like a job. People said, well, it is your job. Well, yeah, but basketball had always been fun for me. It wasn't a job. I didn't really like not look forward to it. I love playing basketball, like we talked about many times. I wanted to be on the court. You know, playing 36 minutes a game, I wouldn't have been happy. That's what most guys do nowadays. 36 minutes. No. It's a 48-minute game. I want to play. I love the game. And so I want to play. And so I didn't have fun. I led the league in scoring, MVP of the All-Star game. We came within two pick and roll plays with Nate Thurman and myself against Wilt Chamberlain, that if they had gone our way, we would have beaten that great 76er team in six games. And I didn't have a lot of fun. And so I'm saying, what? This is something wrong with this. And now I had a chance with the new league coming in to go and play for my father-in-law, who was my college coach.
Oh, okay. I didn't
so that's
know
how
that.
It all right. Came down. And that was all in there and doing. You got to do your reading, Cyrus.
I'm waiting for your book.
It was in the Confessions of a Basketball Gypsy, one of my books that was out there. But the thing is that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, it was already, I talked about this stuff before. And so the thing is that I sat out a year to do it. And I said, no, you guys want to do it. And the league was really upset with the Warriors because they said, well, no, we have an option on your services. So it turned. The contract basically now became an option. And so I said, okay, great. You have an option. So I'm going to sit out and give you my option year. So that's how it all came about. And it's so crazy how many guys have come up. Hey, I studied law school. I studied your case in law school. It went on for years and years because a judge got sick and all. Yeah, no, it's kind of crazy what happened. And see, contrary to what has been said, I never, ever didn't honor a contract I had signed.
I've never read you did that. I guess I just assumed that your reasoning for the ABA was they were throwing more money out.
No.
That's surprising.
I could have gone back to the Warriors and made more money staying with the Warriors.
That's very interesting.
I just did it because it wasn't fun. I mean, basketball always been fun for me. It wasn't fun. Can you imagine? I was the MVP of the All-Star game. I led the league in scoring. We went to the finals of the stuff, and it wasn't fun.
No,
the whole season, because it just – the playing was – I mean, playing was fun and all, but the overall experience, what I went through the entire season and just the way that we did things, no days off. I went to him one time and said, Bill, listen, I'm playing 40-something minutes a game. I said, can I please just sleep in and get up at this time? He would have us go 2 hours before a commercial because we owed a commercial. You play a game, you fall asleep at 2 o'clock. You got to be on a 7 o'clock in the morning flight, right, to the next city.
Right.
Okay. So these guys complain about how tough they have it. Yeah, I want to hear that. So I fall asleep at two. So I'm saying, look, it's a 7 o'clock flight. Can I just get over there at six instead of five? And just give me another hour of sleep. Well, you know, Rick, you know, if the taxi has a flat in the tunnel, the Sumner Tunnel going over to the airport when you stay downtown, I said, you know, you can miss the flight. I said, Bill, if I left at that time and we had a flight, I could walk with my bag and still get to the airport in time to make the flight. it was just one of those things that he was fanatical about those kinds of things. He's the one that started the shoot arounds in the morning, which I hated and I still think is a freaking waste of time. And it's all about getting you out of bed. Seriously. I mean, the big thing, the shoot around in the morning, and everybody copies everything that somebody does when they're successful. Yep. It's just amazing to me what happens in the NBA and how they go. And then they get the little guy. So let's have the little guys. Okay, we got the Spud Webbs and we got the Muggsy Bogues and everything. And they finally realize that you're never going to win a championship with that. Okay, but everybody's going to copy and do what somebody did that was successful. Yeah,
that's the way it is with most facets of life, right? I mean, very few people are original. They see ideas that are possible successful and then try to replicate it and –
Well, it's one thing to have some, but not as your starting point guard. It's one thing you bring a guy in and to try to change the tempo of it and do it and see if it works for a few minutes or something, but not something that's going to be the focal point of your team. I mean, and your offense. And like, I couldn't even believe, like, sometimes I remember when my son Brent was playing at all, and Brent actually was a great post-up. He had great post-up moves, but that, you know, coaches he had never utilized him. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying, he's playing a game, and all of a sudden, if they bring in, you know, they bring in, let's say, a Spud Webb or whoever it was that was there, and when he was playing, might have been Muggsy Bogues, I don't know. Why in the world, if I was coaching against that team, the moment he came in the game, I would have an offense ready to go, and I would abuse that player in the post.
I don't understand why they don't do that more often. You're right.
I mean, like, seriously, why am I going to let him come in and let this guy run, say, you know, helter-skelter up and down the court, changing the tempo of the game to give them an advantage over my team? No, he's going to pay a dear price for coming in the game because he's going in the post, and I'm going to abuse him.
Yeah, the abandonment of the post makes no sense to me in today's NBA. None. I mean, it's such an obvious advantage, such a simple and effective offensive play if you have that advantage, which teams do. If Isaiah Thomas is out there playing, why are you not posting him up every single time?
Here's the thing. You take advantage of what the other team has to offer, especially their weaknesses. Okay, that's why it just – well, give me the drives me crazy.
Yeah, let me pull that up real quick here. Yeah.
Might as well do that now and throw that out there. And what drives me crazy about the NBA is how they will make a rule to protect the guy with horse manure skills. It's so stupid. All this stuff about the free throw. Oh, yeah, well, it's ruining the game. No, what's ruining the game is that team coaches are taking players to play on their team that have major deficiencies in certain skills in the game that you're supposed to have. And so you're going to go and change the rules so that the other team can't take advantage of the weakness that that player has and protect him? You should be ashamed of yourself. Ashamed of yourself. Like, I gave great credit to John McLeod. One of the things that he did, along with Al Bianchi, when they beat us in that seven-game series where we should have gone to the finals two years in a row and lost in seven games at home in the 75-76 season, they intentionally fouled off the ball and made somebody else on my team get to the free throw line, and they put the rule in that you can't foul in the last 2 minutes off the ball intentionally. And I'm saying that's a stupid rule. That's a stupid rule. If the other team has somebody in there who's not a good free throw shooter, you should be allowed to do that and put that player on the line because you're taking advantage of the weakness of your opponent. Why are you going to put a rule in to protect that player?
Yeah, I mean, just to play contrarian here, my guess is that the free throws probably slowed the game down too much and was boring. But I see what you're saying. I do. I follow you.
Well, it's ridiculous. I mean, it slowed the game down. It slowed the game down. Hey, it's the game. That's the way the game is played. That's the way it is. So what are you going to do then? You're going to go ahead and have, okay, a quarterback can't, you know, they can't come up to the run line of scrimmage when the clock's going down and spike the ball to stop the clock.
Yeah, that would be crazy if they change that. You're right.
Thank you. Well, it's the same thing here. Why are you changing this? Right? The same thing is you take advantage of, say, you know, a guy can't hit a curveball in baseball. You're not going to have him say, okay, you can only throw three curveballs to him. Makes no sense.
Makes no sense. You're right.
It makes no sense in anything. Yeah, you're going to play tennis and everything. Oh, well, this guy isn't really good on a backhand return to serve, so you can't, you know, you can only serve a certain number of times to his backhand. Come on. Let's get realistic here.
Do you want to answer a couple of questions from fans?
Sure.
So we answer questions on Twitter. Our podcast Twitter account is @Warriors24Pod. A couple of questions came in. These are pertaining primarily to the Warriors making the trade for Andrew Wiggins. We haven't really broken that down yet. Maybe we should talk about that. But Momel, 478239991, whatever your handle is, Momel is what he goes by. He asks, should the Warriors add more veterans this summer?
Well, they probably will.
Yeah, they have to, right? I mean,
you got to decide who's going to be your other players and have your bench. I mean, the critical element, as we've talked about many times, is having a bench that can, call to say, hold the fort. Right. You know, so you're getting attacked. You got to have, you know, somebody to hold the fort for you when your frontline people aren't necessarily available. And the Warriors' success, and that was the big thing when they made the move and got KD. I said, well, what's going to happen? Because a lot of players left that team. I said, well, it's going to be all predicated on how good the bench develops. So you have to have the bench. There's no question about that. And you want to have veteran players there. You don't want to have a bunch of rookies.
Yeah, I feel like last year, the previous summer to this last one, the Warriors dropped the ball a little bit with that. I feel like they avoided veterans that could have helped them and started this youth movement a year too early. Like Jamal Crawford was available. I don't know if Carmelo Anthony is a name you like, but he was available. They could have added some key players, some key veterans that would have been important, that would have been useful when they were in the finals and they didn't have Durant or these other players.
I think they might have been at that time concerned about having to spend the kind of money to do it, not go over the cap. And so they had a chance to get some of the players, but they had some young players. Some of them worked out okay. Some of them didn't.
Yeah.
The biggest problem that they had in that series, you know, when they wound up, even though they went to six games on it, is they didn't have the bench. They didn't have somebody to come in and be able to put 20 points up for them.
Right. And I feel like they could have, and they opted not to sign veterans. I mean, you look at the rosters the previous 2 years. They had like the JaVale McGee's, the David Wests, the Leandro Barbosa's.
Well, then even go back even further, you know, and you have when they brought Iggy in, you know, and that was a big thing.
Yeah.
He was willing to take less, and then they brought David Lee. So I mean that's the kind of stuff you need. You need to have guys who are willing to do whatever. I was willing to do that. I went to the Rockets to do that and was willing to do that. And to even take a situation if they wanted me, you know. In fact, the second year when I was there, I told, it was Del Harris who's the coach, I said, Del, why don't you start Robert Reed? I said, let me come off the bench. Let me watch. Let me see what's happening. Let me come in, and then I can go ahead and do something coming off the bench and bring an element to the team. I made that suggestion.
Yeah, and they misused you, right? I mean, they could have utilized you more than they did.
That's a whole nother story.
well, let me say this. So the Warriors right now, I'm personally a huge supporter of this move. I did not think D'Angelo Russell was a good fit on this team. In my opinion, nothing personal against him, but good riddance. He's just too small. He's too small, and his style of play is not conducive with the Warriors' free-flow system on offense, ball movement, and movement off the ball, right? He just mostly stood there, didn't play defense that much. So I do love the addition of Wiggins. I think him being the third or fourth best player on a team is a perfect fit for him. He's proven, I think, to a certain extent, being the number one or two guy might not be the best role for him. But with that said, if the Warriors want to be a championship team next year, and I think right now with this roster, the way it's constructed, they're a playoff team. I don't think they're a championship team. They got to replace Iggy. That's the fifth man on that roster, the fifth guy on that and out there on the court at the end of the game, to me right now is uncertain. It's not settled. And Andre, well,
they've got
that
a lot
guy.
Of things to do still.
A lot, yeah, but for the most part, I mean, if you look at the roster for the most part, I think it's about 12 men deep in terms of it being set for next year. But they do have that $17 million trade exemption that Joe Lacob came out and said they're going to use, which is huge. That means you can go out there and acquire a big contract, a big veteran, and they're going to have that lottery pick. So that's two more spots, but I don't see any player on the roster who fills Andre Iguodala's role. That's a hole that they haven't filled yet. I think they
have the opportunity to go out and fight to get somebody that would be that type of a player. I mean, yeah. And then also hopefully make a great decision with their draft pick to take someone who has the potential, if there is someone out there. I don't follow the college game all that much to tell you who I think might be an answer.
I don't know.
And most of those guys aren't ready to be, you know, short bona fide type of players, kind of like, you know, there's not that many Zion. I haven't seen any Zion Williamsons out there who's actually doing amazing stuff right now.
Amazing.
And we'll talk about him in a second. But
yeah.
So, but also they can use that draft pick to also get another veteran kind of player or somebody. And I can't imagine that there wouldn't be some guys, as a trade thing, and throw that into the equation for making the deal and being able to bring in somebody who has that experience to bring that extra something special to the team, which they need to have. And they also, they got to find somebody that's a rim protector. I actually told Bob Myers about it, to have their scouts go out and check. I have somebody that I'm always in touch with people sending me stuff. I saw a guy who could possibly be a steal for them. And I'm not even going to mention any names, but I sent them some video of it and I told them about it. And I think they've reached out to the person here in the country who is a friend of mine that is kind of like a father to this young man from overseas. And boy, I'll tell you what, this guy is a freaking shot blocking fool. He's athletic as can be.
Young, so he's young, ready to play overseas.
Young, but smart. And this is, you know, not super young, but been around and actually, you know, took off this past season to get his master's.
So he's intelligent. I like that.
Yeah. So I tell you what, from what I saw, I don't care who he was playing against. I just watched the way he moved. I watched the way he has a feel for the ball, on the ball, and then off the ball, weak side help, blocking shots, run the court, nice footwork inside, right hand, left hand, finish. I'm telling you, I'd be interested to see what happens. I hope they give this guy a real shot and bring him in and take a shot at, you know, why not? I mean, you got nothing to lose. I mean, and you can wind up getting the guy for a minimum contract.
Well, I hope Bob Myers listens to you. And, you know, the name that keeps popping up for a center in the draft, and it was likely the number one pick, is James Wiseman. If the Warriors get the number one pick, that's probably what they're going to do. But to me, besides acquiring Wiggins, and I think that's a great pickup for them, and he's going to fit in fantastically with this organization, they got rid of Jacob Evans' contract, which I thought was huge, a very underrated part of this trade. Here's another question from Twitter, and this is another individual. And NoCap757 is the person's handle. Should Bob Myers have kept D'Angelo Russell and then traded him to Philly in the summer for either Ben Simmons or what's his name? I'm brain farting in the center.
What?
Joel Embiid. Thank you.
Not going to get rid of either of those guys.
I know.
We talked about this the last show. I mean, you came up with a very valid point. I mean, it's a huge risk for them. D'Angelo's playing at a high level. There's interest. Why are you going to wait until after the season is over? Who knows how he's going to play the rest of the season? Who knows if he's not going to have an injury or something? And all of a sudden you have nothing and he's got a max contract. You never get rid of it.
Exactly. The risk of injury and the fact that his stock was high.
Thank you.
You.
I mean,
sell
they did,
when that stock is high.
It was a no-brainer to make a move for him now.
Yes. And not to mention the fact that you're right. I would have preferred Ben Simmons, obviously. I would have preferred Joel Embiid, obviously. But there's no guarantee either is available. And there's no guarantee Philly would even want D'Angelo Russell. For the people out there who think they should have waited, do you really think Bob Myers was not putting feelers out there to see if that interest would exist in the summer? It wasn't there.
No. Good move. It's a good move by him. And we talked about this. I mean, all of them saying is that what Wiggins needs to do now is just go work. In fact, even get with Clay or Steph and work on his 3-point shooting and get himself to be 35 or above in 3-point shooting, hopefully higher, you know, closer to 40, get him to be that proficient at the 3-point line. And that gives them a dimension that becomes unguardable, kind of like with KD, even though KD was unique in his way because of his size that he can get a shot anytime he wanted, but to give them three guys that you have to worry about from the perimeter.
Yeah, and exactly. Look, no one's going to replace Durant. I mean, that's just a player you're never going to replace. But Wiggins, to me, is a very suitable replacement.
Well, I'm going to say the same thing I said about KD when he came. Wiggins is going to enjoy playing on this team next season more than he ever has before because he will get more easy opportunities and have more fun playing basketball than he's had in years.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm so with you. I'm so looking forward to next year. I'm also looking forward to a little bit of this year. I want to see how Wiggins progresses. Steve Kerr mentioned how it took Durant about 3 months to fully integrate into the Warriors system, so Wiggins has that advantage now, being acquired now instead of in the summer. And that was actually another reason why they traded D'Angelo now, was to integrate whoever they brought in at this point of the season instead of waiting until the start of next year and having to go through that time. You want to talk about Zion? I mean, look,
he just put up some serious numbers. You know, he got 30. I think he's one of only three or four guys at his age to ever put up the kind of numbers that he's put up, where he got 30 points and a bunch of assists and rebounds. Mm-hmm. And he's doing some really cool things. And he's certainly a talent. And I think you brought up an interesting thing in our notes talking about it, that, you know, don't write off the rookie of the year, because there's still a lot of basketball left to play. And this guy is playing at a level, if he continues to do it, what, 6 of the first 8 games he's played, he's got 20 points or more.
Amazing. It really is amazing. He's living up to the hype so far.
And he's getting him in all kinds of different ways. And so, So it's, but he's one of those guys that's just kind of fun to watch.
Very fun. We did that segment at the beginning of our podcast, The Price of Admission, right? And we should probably do a new one of those at some point. Yeah, he's right up there.
He's definitely worth the price of admission. He's a unique person. Yeah. He's, again, get back to what I've talked about, and you've heard me say it many times over the years. He's an anomaly.
He is. He is.
There's never been a player like him in the game.
Does he remind you of Barkley a little bit?
No, he reminds me actually of a bigger version of LeBron.
Interesting.
Except that LeBron had the ball handling and passing skills that are a little bit higher level. But, I mean, he's taller than LeBron.
No, he's shorter by two inches.
Wait a second. How tall is LeBron now?
6'8".
Wait a second. You're talking Zion 6'6 only?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, wait a second. I never saw that he was 6'6". I saw that he definitely would be more towards the Barkley end of things.
But that's what
I thought. Everything I saw him listed, he was listed at like 6'8".
Yeah, he's 6'6", but he's such a...
See the liars, those little rotten SOBs.
Well,
they kill you with the stats.
Well, you know what's crazy? This is the first year the NBA has ever actually made it mandatory for teams to report players' height without sneakers.
Ah, yeah, because I know I was 6'7". They always said I was 6'8", but I was 6'7½ without my sneakers.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, so Draymond had to basically come out and reveal that he's actually 6'6", even though he used to always say he was 6'7".
Right.
So Zion is listed as 6'6", and that's why I say the Barkley.
Wow. I didn't know that. So you learn something new every day. Well, if that's the case, then you're right. With the analogy, would be more like a Charles Barkley, but just actually bigger and stronger than Barkley was when he first came in,
which is really crazy.
Although Charles was kind of big, he was the round mound, the rebound. But I'm talking about as far as a physical specimen. Charles wasn't somebody that was like a physical size. He was actually fat at the time, one time.
He was. The round mound, yes.
Yeah, the round mound, the rebound.
And he's
but
fat
Zion
again.
Is, I mean, come on. The guy's averaging, 21 points a game. He's still got, you know, more than a couple assists. He's shooting 40% from threes. That's the amazing thing. And 56, almost 58% from twos. Those are crazy numbers.
And he's got almost eight rebounds. And again, for a guy 6'6", I mean, he could play the center position. I mean, for some reason, he's dominates out there.
He's a very interesting young man. There's no question. So, he still has to be, I think, in some kind of consideration for
– Agreed.
For the rookie of the year. I mean, there's still plenty of time left. I don't think they should say, well, I think he'll play enough. I don't know if there's a stipulation as to the number of games you have to play to be eligible or not. And
there isn't.
And if there isn't, well, if there isn't, then he has to be in consideration because he's doing, is there anybody else, any rookie that's even coming close to those kind of numbers and performance? I don't think so.
I mean, the only other one is the current favorite, Ja Morant. And I'm actually pulling up his stats right now to do a little comparison. Because Ja Morant, because again, Zion's averaging better than 21 and nearly eight rebounds a game. Ja Morant is at 17.6
per game. He's got seven rebounds, which is impressive to me.
Or seven assists. Skinny, you
know, I mean, not rebounds, assists. Seven assists, which is nice because he's got the ball in his hands. You see, that's the thing. Pull that up I see it here. Seven assists and 3.5 rebounds, which is nice. I mean, nothing spectacular. But when you have the ball in your hands, you should have more assists.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I told you before, if I had to do it over again and I started my career right now, the younger, I'd be a point guard.
You mentioned that before. Yeah. And that's no, I would love
be a point guard because I realize now and seeing it, everything, you have so much more control over the outcome of the game with the ball in your hand because you're the one that can get everybody involved. I mean, I tried to do that as much as I could from my position, which I think I did a good job of, but if I had the ball in my hands all the time, my God, it would be so much fun. And as far as the quickness goes, I was quicker than the guards on our teams. I was a lot quicker than people realize. And so it's just been a matter of my time. I mean, ball handling, you didn't have the same kind of skills, and that's something you could just work on and do drills and get a lot better at it. But, yeah, I would want to do that. If I had to do it over again, I'd have my son Canyon been a point guard, which he was early in his career. But you can't – you're at the mercy of the guy with the ball.
Speaking of Canyon, by the way, you posted a clip on Twitter of him just with a – fantastic steal and dunk.
Well, he's a lot more athletic than people realize. I mean, they don't even know that. I mean, he wasn't invited to the projected first and second round picks despite being sixth man of the year in the SEC, but he went to Portsmouth and they did the same testing there. If he had been in Chicago, he would have been first in standing vertical, second in max vertical by half an inch, first in agility, first in something else, and second in something, and third in something else. I mean, he was, he would have tested better than anybody that was there. But people don't know that, and it's just – anyway, don't get me started on that because it's just a very sore subject with me. I'm just so tired. He's such a great kid, and I know he'll be fine because he's a brilliant young man, and, with his master's in nuclear engineering. But he's still doing great despite the fact that, the last game they brought all these guys in the trade that they just made at Minnesota. So all of a sudden he was playing, like almost 20 minutes and getting only maybe 5, 6, or 7 shots in a game and shooting over 60% and shooting over like 45, 47% from threes and still getting to double digits. And then so they bring all these guys in last game. He gets to play 6 minutes.
so your gripe basically, and I completely understand that that's what this is that he just give him a shot. Let him actually prove
every
himself,
time he's
right?
had an opportunity to do it. When he was overseas in all places, he averaged over 20, and then 30 in China for a month. I mean, but you got to have the ball and you have to be someone running an offense and letting you play. I mean, it's just it has to have it, but it can't have it. Like last year, the coach said, I love your son, but I said, I have to play these two-way guys. They got to play him a certain, at least 35 minutes or whatever it is a game. Mm-hmm. And so he said, well, I just put your son out there because I wanted him on the floor because I knew he was going to make good decisions. And only played him. Sometimes he had him on the floor playing four, depending upon the size of the other team.
How's his three-point shot?
He's over 40% shooter.
I don't understand why he's not playing the league then.
40%, man. I mean, you got so many teams out there that have guys shooting in the 20s and barely. Yes. I mean, it's crazy.
That is crazy.
And you know how hard it is, Cyrus, how hard it is to shoot 40% when you're getting one or two shots a game, three shots maybe? It's not easy.
No, I'm with you. I'm totally with you. Yeah.
Not easy. Anyway, let's get on to something else that we want to talk about.
A few more topics before we wrap things up. I wanted to mention, last week we talked about just the utter shit show that is the New York Knicks, and it just doesn't stop. This organization to me is comedy at this point. I don't understand why anyone would ever want to play for them unless you just want to take that check. So recently, and there's sound associated with this, the Knicks decided to hire an individual named Steve Stout as the branding manager of the team, right? This is a former music executive. I've never heard of this guy until he went on First Take, your favorite show on ESPN. I'm being facetious saying that. So here's a soundbite of Steve Stout talking about rebranding the Knicks, and then I'll tell you why this clip is relevant.
We got to get athletes to believe that they can come here and actually be them best selves. I mean, that hasn't transpired over recent times, and I understand some of the reasons why. We got to solve that issue. I just think there's a culture of winning and excitement that New York City has. New York City is the hub of sports and entertainment. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel. And it started moving around. My job is to bring it back. Toronto Raptors, they brought in Drake, right? They brought in Drake to bring that thing. The New York Knicks brought in me.
I do love that he compares himself to Drake. So the reason why this is a news story is because the Knicks had to come out and issue a press release stating that Steve Stout is not involved in personnel decisions. And he came out and had to issue an apology himself. A brand manager. I mean,
so here's the thing. And that's actually important, because what that comes down to is basically your marketing. But here's the deal. First of all, it's hard to market chicken, you know what?
Exactly.
You know, so you got to get good chicken. So they don't, first of all, in order for him to do his job, they got to make some wise decisions and get some players who really can play.
Correct.
I mean, so it's hard to go and rebrand something when the quality of your brand sucks. You have to get better talent. That's where it starts. Then this guy can go out and really do his job, but you got to give him something to work with.
Yes.
The NBA is a great example. The NBA was always a terrific product, but it was never marketed properly until David Stern came along and brought Wick Welts and a bunch of other people in to go and turn it into a global enterprise. Mm. It's incredibly successful, multi-billion dollar business. The Knicks need to find someone who can recognize talent. The players that will come in there and play the game the right way, and then have a coach who's going to utilize that talent in the best way possible. That's where it starts. So until they find that, they're in big trouble.
Yeah, it's been 20 years that they've been abysmal. It's crazy for the history of that franchise, the fan base still loving that team. 20 years of just
I am telling you, I had a big talk today with somebody writing a book about it, and I just said the biggest problem is that most of these teams, I really question who they are, who they have as their scouts. The choices that some of these teams make with their first round draft picks are just abominable.
Agreed.
I mean, I don't know what they get hung up on. It's a very simple process, Cyrus. You look.
Is this your truth bomb? We haven't dropped the truth bomb. Do you want to drop some Jack here?
Sure. Why not?
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Oh, Jack.
Okay. So the truth is that get some scouts who know talent. Don't get scouts who get hung up on somebody's athleticism. Just because you're a great athlete doesn't mean you're a great player. And so it take 5 minutes, okay? I watch a player for 5 minutes and tell you whether or not I want to see any more of them. They don't have, and they get paid a lot of money to do this. I don't need to sit there and watch an entire game. In 5 minutes, I want to know if I want to watch any more of this player. And then what I want to find out about him is I want to find out, what does he have inside? What kind of heart does he have? What kind of person? What kind of person is he? He may have some shortcomings in some of the skills, but I can teach him some skills and get him better at the skills, or get coaches on our staff to be able to help him in that area. But does he have what can't be taught? The natural feel for the game.
And Rick, a lot of the problem with these scouts that you to add to this is that some of them are on the other end of the spectrum, where they rely too much on really arbitrary stats. Like I see a lot of these stats like PER, right? Subjective. Offensive, defensive efficiency. plus minus, all these weird.
Well, the
stats
plus minus is BS. That's the biggest BS statement. I mean, you happen to be on the court and your team goes down a bunch of points when you're there, but you're playing with guys who don't know how to play worth a shit. Excuse my language.
No,
I'm sorry.
Okay, that's good. But you have scouts who rely on those, and that's another issue, right? You're right. You have there are not enough scouts who have a genuine feel for this game, who can properly assess and judge players. You're right. I think that's a fundamental issue with a lot of these teams, especially the Knicks. By the way, Rick, can I put you on the 24-second shot clock? This might be kind of a mean one, and you could tell me if it's below the belt. But I have an idea for you for the 24-second shot clock. Can I drop this on you?
I'm always ready for anything.
I love it. All right. Here's your 24-second question. Name any five players on the Knicks.
I'll just let the clock run out. I can't name because I don't even follow them. Why do I want to follow the Knicks?
I mean, seriously.
I mean, they're brutal. I mean, they just don't play the game the right way. They made poor choices in their personnel. And, you know, I mean, and they've changed. How many coaches have they changed in the last 5 years?
Oh, I mean, I can name R.J. Barrett. He was their first round pick last year.
Yeah, right. R.J. Barrett. Yeah, that's the one.
Taj Gibson, I think, is on the team, I think.
But I don't even follow him. I don't even care.
I know, but I can name three. I know. My point is there are a few teams like that where, like, the Pistons come to mind. If I threw that question out, could you name anyone? You know, I mean, some of these teams are so bad.
Well, yeah,
awful.
Because I mean, the honest line is I don't even want to follow them. I mean, why would you want to follow a team that's terrible? I mean, that guy's in even, you know. Oh, yeah, here's another one. So I'm sure everybody is well aware of Kadeem Allen, right?
No, I'm not. Who's that?
He's one of the players on the freaking Knicks.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, seriously. I mean, so you pull them up and you do it. And I see here. So, all right, here we go. This is that type of example that we have some fun.
Okay.
Well, he's not actually doing too bad. Reggie Bullock has got some halfway decent numbers.
On the Pistons? Yeah.
He's
on the Knicks? Yeah. Oh, Reggie, I didn't know he was on the Knicks.
That's what I'm talking about. I mean, so here's another guy. All right, so he's shooting. Well, actually, that's not a bad percentage from his three-point range at all, but he's a 68%, 69% free throw shooter. He's only shooting like 42% from the field, and yet he's on there making millions of dollars. I mean, seriously. I mean,
I know.
I just look at this stuff, and I just, here's another guy on the Knicks making millions who gets 38.5 field goals, barely 30% from threes. That's not acceptable.
Who's that? Who?
No, I'm not going to mention any names. I don't want to get these guys all upset with me. I mean, you start looking at these stats and you just wonder, you know, why are these guys on this team?
I don't know.
You know, another one, you know, 32% from threes. Wow. Big deal. 43 from twos. I mean, that's not good. You know, 32.6 is okay. It's passable, but it's not something you're going to write home about. And then the thing is to forget even the stats. Does he know how to play? Does he understand weak side defense? Does he understand how the game should be played? Does he understand how you can create things for people? I mean, there's so many other elements to it that they just seem to overlook. But, I mean, I can go down team from team for team and pick guys out that are on these rosters who are playing, you know, especially in the scoring position, you know, playing like the guard position or whoever it may be. And their numbers are just pathetic. Here, 33% shooting from the field for two-point range, and he's on the team, and he's making freaking millions of dollars. I mean, it's just I just have such a difficult time having to deal with it.
I'm with you.
It's sad. I mean, it's really sad. Anyway, I wish I had access to all film and stuff and put a show together and do something and show people one time all of the violations that occur in an NBA game that aren't called.
Oh, that happens. It's rampant. Yeah, it's
well, even in college, it's horrible. I mean, North Carolina, and they should be ashamed of themselves for losing that game to Duke because they just went 5 for 12 from the free throw line and then 1 for 5 or some from the field. But they still got screwed. The officials didn't want to do anything. It was a double dribble on the play when the guy went to the basket and scored the tying basket to go to overtime. Then when they cut a three-point deficit to 1 point at the end of end of overtime, the guy carried – it was such a blatant carry of the ball to get to the basket and score the basket. And then on the inbounds pass, it was so evident on the replay, I can't even imagine what these officials looked like. You could even see it. The other guy was a light-skinned black guy, and the other guy was a dark-skinned black guy from Duke. And his hand came in, and it was obvious he knocked the ball out of bounds, and it should have been Carolina ball. So, I mean, this when I watch these kind of things on there, I get disgusted. I really do.
I'm with you. Bad basketball is not easy to watch. And bad officiating.
Well, it's not bad. That was bad officiating. It's bad officiating too. Yeah. I mean, that's the part that's hardest to deal with.
You know, they have this segment every Thursday night on NBA on Inside the NBA on TNT where they do this thing called Shaqt and a Fool. I don't know if you ever saw that.
It's like
blooper reels basically. But the part that just kind of really shocks me every time I watch those segments is that on average, I'd say like 2 out of 5 or 3 out of 5 of those clips, the referees never make the call. They show these egregious traveling calls where someone takes 6, 7, 8 steps and the refs don't blow the whistle. It's just mind-blowing to me. And I think the Damian Lillard goaltend the other night was the most egregious in recent history that I can remember. That was such a blatant goaltend. I mean, that ball went off
still
the backboard.
On the rim, yeah. It was still, I mean, yeah, but also some, yeah. Anyway, it happens all the time. I mean, some of the stuff that takes place. And to be honest with you, if I was the NBA, I wouldn't be too happy that they were showing this kind of stuff because it just shows you the inadequacy of some of these officials. And it's happening for things, I mean, right in front of them. And they don't make the calls. I mean, I have a real problem with that. I had that long talk today with somebody that if you have the ability to nullify a human error in a sporting event, it should be utilized. That technology should always be utilized. The last thing in the world as an athlete that I want to have happen is that we lose a game because of the mistake an official made when it could be overturned.
Yeah. Folks, you got to have your junk clean. Hair down there is just not acceptable anymore. Hasn't been for a long time. And the folks at Manscaped are taking care of you with the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created. No more nicks and cuts. Oh, on your balls. Ouch. And their battery is premium now. It lasts up to 90 minutes. They have an LED light, which illuminates grooming areas. They have a charging stand powered by USB. And if you're listening to me speak right now, you're one of the first people to hear about this product, Manscaped. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code BLEAV, that's Believe, short for the Believe Podcast Network, at manscaped.com. Again, go to manscaped.com. And if you use the free shipping code BLEAV, that's short for Believe, or at least the name Believe, but spelled in our way, you get 20% off. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code Believe, BLEAV. You know, Rick, before we go, I have a question for you because this is I do not understand this. And I'm wondering if you as a former player would have more insight. Why do the Philadelphia 76ers, why are they so dominant at home with the best home record in the NBA, 25-2?
Two, yeah.
But they're 9-19 on the road. Why the discrepancy?
Well, because guys just don't know how to deal with going out on the road. A lot of young players on teams, you don't understand and realize what it takes to be able to play at a high level when you go out on the road. You got the other teams, you know, cheering and their fans are great, rooting and stuff. These guys don't know how to maybe get themselves to get the right kind of rest. God only knows what other things they may be doing out on the road. I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, look at the Miami Heat. The Miami Heat are 22-3 and 13-15.
Yeah.
Right? The Celtics, yeah. I mean, they're 22-5 at home, 15-11 on the road. At least they got a winning record.
I know it's a trend, but the 76ers are really the extreme end of that. I mean, 9-9, 10 games under 500 on the road is just really bad.
Look at the Washington Wizards. They're 50-50 at home and they're 6-20 on the road.
Yeah. But the Wizards, I mean, no one's expecting the Wizards to do anything. I mean, the 76ers have some hype surrounding them. You know, it's very
down so I can see the Western Conference.
Conference standings.
All right, so let's look at this. The Lakers are only 18-7 at home and they're 22-5 on the road.
That's amazing. That's a Warriors type number from their dynasty.
And because that's why, because you got a lot of guys and you had some veteran players that are on the team and they know what to do on the road. And you realize that, you know, you want to get booed on the road because if you're not any good, they wouldn't boo you. And so it's like cheers.
They wouldn't care.
So, and you get a chance to ruin the night for, you know, 15 to 20,000 people. It's great. It's a great incentive. seriously. I mean, just take a look at that. I mean, it's the case for most of the time. And the good teams find a way to win on the road. And that's the difference. You look at the first everybody but the Memphis Grizzlies, the seven of the eight playoff teams that if you had the playoffs right now, all have winning records on the road in the Western Conference.
Seven of eight, yeah.
Yeah, and that the Dallas correct. Mavericks are 18-8 on the road and amazing. Only 14-14 at home.
That's amazing. That's impressive.
So that's why I'm telling you, always expect the unexpected in the NBA. You just can't figure it out. I mean, you really, truly can't. You go crazy trying to figure it out. So if you just live by that model, you'll be absolutely okay. So look, everybody, enjoy yourself. Enjoy what's happening in the NBA. I'm sure there'll be some amazing stories, but I am not going to be with you for next week because I'm going to fulfill one of my bucket lists items. I am heading to the Amazon in Brazil to go peacock bass fishing.
This is official.
And this is official. I'm leaving. Yeah, I'm leaving. Actually, you know what? No. Next week, I think we might be able to actually do it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we could do a show right before I go. So, yeah, it would be after that. So, we need to do, if we're going to do the show, we got to do the show next week before I leave on my trip. So, yeah, we'll get another show in before I head off to the Amazon. So that'd
be beautiful. I cannot believe you're doing that. And I'm looking forward to when you get back sharing some stories.
Well, that's I'm really looking forward to this. Peacock. Yeah. Anyway, we'll talk more about my peacock best next week, but anyway, have a great week weekend everybody. this is like it's gonna be awesome.
And before we go, cameo.com, people can actually get a personalized message from you. Just go to
Cameo. Did one from somebody from China, just sent in to do something that I did one for somebody came from China to do a cameo, and so I didn't speak in Chinese, so I don't know Mandarin
or Cantonese.
Cantonese, but Mandarin is the predominant one,
right?
I think it's 70 something percent of the people speak Mandarin in China.
Beautiful. So
God bless over there. Hopefully they find for the neurovirus. Hopefully they find some, get that thing out of the way. That's so sad.
They're saying 18 months before they get a vaccination. So let's hope this doesn't spread too rampantly.
I just read something that somebody said they had something else that they were using and were getting some good results with it. So hopefully true.
I hope so. Yeah. But so again, people can subscribe. You can go to cameo.com and get a personalized message from Rick. A great gift idea. And you can follow Rick Barry on all social media platforms at Rick24Barry. You can follow me on Twitter at DogSurfRoadshow and follow the program, the podcast at Warriors24Pod. Rick, always a pleasure, sir.
Always a pleasure. Appreciated your forthright. You were very forthright, using some very intelligent big words. So showing your education, because I don't know if people know and everything that you actually have done a lot of teaching, right? Are you an actual professor?
I am an actual professor, yes.
There you go. So there you go. So I am working with a very astute individual. So you have a wonderful weekend coming up, and everybody will look forward to having you join us on Warriors 24 with Cyrus Atchison and Rick Barry. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.